Welcome to another episode of the Flagrant 2 podcast. I am Reed Forgrave. Our million-dollar duck, Bill Ryder, is on his deathbed. Not actually on his deathbed, but still struggling. Joey, producer Joe. Yeah, producer Joey? You got something
to say?
The
million-dollar duck!
There he is. He's the million-dollar duck. Joey had to throw that in. Producer Joey's here. We're both struggling with colds, but nowhere near what Mr. Ryder is. Producer Joey, how's the dating life in New York City? We need updates, bro.
It's going decent. The Knicks game the other night was good. It was fun. Yeah. We'll see each other again. She was cool. She's a good person.
Can you tell us the 30-second version of the story of how you got this? And yes, I'm a creepy married father of two, so I asked Joey to show me pictures of this lovely young lady. Can you tell us all how you were able to get a date with such a beautiful woman?
A friend of mine told me she has a cousin who lives in New York City. And she said, my cousin sent a DM, direct message, to Kristaps Porzingis on Instagram.
No DM meant direct message. Thank you for that.
Her message was, it was clever. It took me a while to figure it out, so I don't know if Porzingis is going to figure it out. But her message was, I'm 5'3", you're 7'3", let's meet in the middle and go to dinner at 6:30. Get it? Get it?
If a guy said that, I think that would be considered cheesy, but you know, anything that comes from a beautiful woman like that is cool.
Well, so my takeaway to my friend was, you buried the lead. You have a cousin who lives in New York City that you haven't told me about since I moved to New York City. So my response was to send her cousin a message that said, you're 5'3", I'm 5'9", let's go to a Knicks game sometime and watch your boy. And she responded, she was shocked. Didn't realize how I knew that she sent that message, whatever, but she liked it. So then we ended up going to Knicks game.
I love that, Joey. Let it go, man.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. It was fun.
And you know what? Maybe you end up hooking her up with Kristaps. And if not, you know, she has friends also in New York City. So
hey.
Producer Joey's slowly making his way to find his way in the big city. I'd like to remind you guys to please subscribe. Download, rate, review this podcast on iTunes, or you can listen on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, all sorts of places that you can find the lovely Flagrant 2 podcast. And don't forget, guys, look, Lance Stephenson, everyone's talking about Porzingis, everyone's talking about Giannis. Let's be honest, Lance Stephenson is having a Hall of Fame season this year for the Indiana Pacers. Hashtag Operation Born Ready All-Stars. We are going to send Lance to the All-Star game. He will be the captain for the East. He will blow in LeBron's ear. Tell me you don't want that, America. So, America, look, I'd like to consider this a bit of a relaxed podcast. There's a lot of teams panicking right now. We like to do that as NBA fans. We're not even a month into the season, and we like to panic. So this is going to be me bringing down your chill level a little bit because it's early, first of all. We're all reading tea leaves at this point. And by the way, this is a patient league. We got to be patient, especially with young players. One team that does not have to be patient and one team whose fan base is not panicking is the Golden State Warriors. Look, this is my expert opinion here. The Golden State Warriors are good. They are good at basketball. Producer Joey, how are the Golden State Warriors right now? What are the predictions here?
The ceiling is the roof.
That's really all we need. Like,
that's it.
They're gonna win it. They're gonna win it all, right?
Like, there's no concerns there. They're good.
Unless that team has some, you know, like they'll need to have like six different injuries in order for them to not make the finals or not win at all. The Boston Celtics are surprisingly, I think, the most interesting team in the NBA right now. They have won 10 straight. They got the best record in the league. They are, and get this, they're the second team in league history to lose their first two games of the season and then win their next 10. Obviously, producer Joey, we talked about this right after that awful, I hate to throw around the word tragic, but it felt tragic at the time, that Gordon Hayward injury, that this team's chances this year were done. Like, not that they'd be an awful basketball team, but a team that had aspirations of making the finals. had immediately lost it the moment that Gordon Hayward tore his ankle in half. But we've seen Jason Tatum be absolutely incredible. Like, he is in the running, if not at the top of the list for Rookie of the Year right now. I don't want to be one of those sports writers who says "told you so," because that's literally the most annoying trait in sports writers. But to be a sports writer who says "told you so," remember who had him number one overall in his mock draft back in May. And by the way, like, had him getting traded to the Celtics with that pick. That was me. That was me, Joey. Me. I love Jason Tatum. I think he is. We knew he was going to be a fundamentally sound offensive player. A guy can do a million different things on offense. We didn't know he was going to be this good on defense. Brad Stevens is an absolute genius. And as we heap all this praise onto the Boston Celtics, Joey, you reminded me before this podcast that the last team to win their first two games, I'm sorry, to lose their first two games and then win their next 10 was the 2006-2007 Dallas Mavericks. And please remind our listeners, Joey, what happened to that team? They were a one seed, right? They were great.
Yeah, that was it. There were big expectations going to the playoffs for that team, and they lost in the first round to the Warriors.
To the Warriors.
Baron Davis, Steven Jackson, that team.
That's wild. So you are predicting that the Boston Celtics are going to be the one seed, and they're going to lose to, let me think, the Philadelphia 76ers will finally have will finally figure things out just, right in time?
Yeah, I think – well, I don't know if it's the Sixers. I don't know. Look, Detroit's playing really well, but they won't keep it up, but they could be an eight seed. Bucks are struggling. Maybe they don't pick it up till halfway through the season, and then you get Bledsoe and Giannis hitting their stride as an eight seed. I don't know. I mean – this feels
the
like
the Bucks are going to be an eight seed. Get out of here, Joey.
Who knows?
Come
in this year's NBA, in the NBA this year, you don't know. I just, the Celtics strike me as a team.
You and Bill Ryder with your East Coast bias, speaking about these East Coast teams. I know the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be like a top four seed by the time.
That's fair, but also the East is, it's the East.
It's trash.
Yeah. I don't know who it's going to be. They just strike me as a team that could happen to. I mean, they're young. They are super talented, but they're young. So it's going to be a lot of guys outside of Kyrie and Horford who don't have a lot of playoff experience. If they end up with the one seed, who knows? It's 10 games into the year.
No. It's guaranteed.
Oh, it's a lock. Guaranteed. It's done.
It's a lock. Yeah, it's early. I love it. We should do a bold predictions podcast, and I think that's going to lead a bold prediction podcast. The Celtics get the one seed and lose to an eight seed. That's happened, by the way, only five times in NBA history. Most recently, when Derrick Rose tore his ACL and the Sixers beat the Bulls as an eight seed back in 2012. I don't think the Celtics. If I'm a Celtics fan, I was devastated one game into the season because, look, I didn't think they were going to upend the Cavs, maybe in the regular season, but certainly not in the playoffs because LeBron is still LeBron. But I thought they had a chance. And one game into the season, this fan base was, basically going into therapy and just absolutely struggling. And what we're seeing with this team, starting with these two youngsters, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kyrie has been awesome on defense. They have the best defense in the league, led by Kyrie Irving. Those are words that I never thought would come out of my mouth, Joey. Last night they had a couple of injuries that came out. Al Horford in concussion protocol. That's certainly not good because Al Horford, I mean, he's the new big fundamental in the NBA.
Absolutely.
He's not Duncan, obviously. But yep. he's like the quietest star in the league, and Jason Tatum, they're calling it ankle soreness, which I don't know exactly what that means. My ankles are sore most days from going on like 4 mile very slow jogs, so let's hope it's not anything more than that. But look, they have this next man up mentality that they've shown since 5 minutes into the season. Aaron Baines. 21 points in 23 minutes last night. That's without Horford. Semi Ojeleye, Daniel Tice, both gave meaningful minutes after Tatum goes out. Joey, what are your thoughts on Aaron Baines looking like the big-time role player these Celtics need?
I took a look at Baines in the shower. He looks like all of Australia. He is really put together.
Oh, Joey, it is amazing how you can make your voice change like that. And it is amazing the sort of love that you have for Aaron Baines' beautiful Australian body.
Touches
my heart, Joey.
Look, I was in the league for a long time. I bring that type of expert analysis to this podcast.
There you go. Do you have any? I mean, like, look, I get that a lot of the Celtics' wins have been against not necessarily the top level teams. Obviously, lost to the Cavs. That was the first game of the year, yep. So I'm just going to not count that one. But we haven't really seen them against the best teams yet. Is there anything about this team that gives you pause that, hey, maybe they aren't – look, I don't think they are best team in the NBA, as their record would say. I don't think anyone would argue that. But they aren't – is there anything that gives you pause that they may not be nearly as good as they look right now?
Youth. And talent. I mean, and really talent level at this point. I mean, when you lose Hayward,
so like the two most important things, talent and experience.
Well, it's not that they're not talented. It's just that when you lose Hayward, who's supposed to be your second star, look, I think they could easily win 50 to 60 games in the East and be a one seed. Sure. My concern is not going to be with in the regular season for them. It's going to be in the playoffs when they need that second big time player or third after Kyrie and Horford, however you look at that ranking their stars. That would be my only concern, but no, in the league right now, there's wins to be had when you're well coached and you play hard.
100%, dude.
Especially in the regular season.
100%. I saw the Celtics in person a couple weeks ago, that game in Milwaukee at the Mecca. They're a joy to watch. They're just so crisp, and I could throw out every coaching cliche out there, but like they buy in, right? Like Brad Stevens has this team. You know, he's a puppeteer for these guys, and yet he's getting them to play with freedom. Kyrie looks more motivated, whether that's Brad Stevens or whether it's just the fact that he has new surroundings and feels that he has to prove himself in some strange sense now that he's outside of LeBron's shadow. I still look, King is still the king, right? Like, I don't think the Celtics are going to make the finals, but I do think in this really weird way that this Gordon Hayward injury, tragic though it was, let's assume that he comes back 100% like Paul George did from his tragic injury several years ago. I think this could be a blessing in disguise for these Celtics heading forward, because they had to figure things out in a really bad situation. They had to throw Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown into much bigger roles than they would have been. And those guys they're proving themselves. And can you imagine this team once Gordon Hayward gets back? Can you imagine if Gordon Hayward comes back for the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavs and like Kyle Schwarber style from the Cubs last year just all of a sudden is an absolute beast? Is there any chance of that happening, Joey?
I wouldn't. I mean, I guess anything's possible with today with the way modern medicine and the way their guys recover from these type of injuries. But man, would you want to see it? Would you want to risk it? And to that end,
if you're in the conference finals, though,
can this team beat the Cavs with Gordon Hayward? Do you think so?
These Cavs, like,
well, yeah, these Cavs.
I mean, not the May June Cavs.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
These Cavs, I don't know. I don't like these Cavs. Like, what are they? Are they last in the league in defensive efficiency? Is that where they're sitting right now?
That's where they. If not, it's 28.
Right around. They're like,
third
in offense, 30th in defense. Like, by the way, as Roger Bell pointed out on our last podcast, Isaiah Thomas, you know, their midseason savior comes in. That defense, like, certainly doesn't get better. Maybe even gets worse.
Yeah, I thought about it a lot actually after that podcast. There was a lot of talk that they were going to go after Bledsoe. That might have been the move for them.
Yeah. I don't know if they had – I mean, like, who do you
– Yeah, they don't. I mean, they're not going to give up that pick, but
– Or maybe you do. Like, that pick's not – like, the Nets are – again, it's so early. The Nets are better than we ever expected. That pick may not be a top five pick. And if that pick is not top five in this draft, I think it's worth a lot less. We'll go into – possibly even tomorrow, a little bit of rookie talk and a little bit of next year's draft talk, where I believe that if you get a top five pick, and I'm really, you know, I pay a lot of attention to this stuff. I also cover the college game, and I believe if you have a top five pick, you might get a franchise player. And I believe if you have the sixth pick or lower, you can still get a nice player, but it ain't that sort of, you know, golden asset that we're thinking it is right now. Let's talk about a guy who just never gets talked about. He lives in a small city. His dad is really quiet, doesn't like to pump him up. He just is a guy who rarely gets headlines. You guys know who I'm talking about. Lakers' little-known point guard, rookie point guard, Lonzo Ball. You may not have even heard of Lonzo Ball, Joey. Do you even know this name? Do you just know him as the guy whose brother really likes Louis Vuitton sunglasses in China?
I thought I knew him as the one whose younger brother is homeschooled, right?
Yeah, isn't that who it is? That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Panic in Lakerland, right? Lonzo Ball is not the player we expected. Lonzo Ball can't shoot. Lonzo Ball has the worst shooting percentage in the paint in the NBA. Oh, so you think that must mean he's making all his outside shots? Nope. Outside the paint, he has the second worst shooting percentage in the NBA. He's not hitting threes. He is not leading this team. He looks terrible. Are you worried, Joey? I will tell you right now, my worry level is like a one. I still think Lonzo Ball is going to be awesome and that his shot is going to fall. Ugly though it is, I have close to zero worries about Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, no, and I think the Lakers are playing, I think they're playing well for what they are right now, which is a really young team trying to figure out Luke Walton's system and playing with a new point guard and making all the pieces fit together. I'm not concerned about Lonzo. Like, he's never going to be a great, great scorer in this league, but I think
we never thought he was going to be a great scorer coming in.
Yeah, and I think where some people are freaking out is that he shot well in college.
Yeah, he shot 41% from three in college, and he was like one of the most efficient 2-point scorers in all of college basketball. You know, up there with like big men who were just dunking the ball all the time. But go ahead, sorry, I'm cutting you off.
Oh no, it's fine. No, and I like that. Those are both great points. I think you see flashes of his ability to get to the rim already early in the season, and his ability to score in transition, and the things that we knew he'd be able to do early on. The shooting is gonna take a minute. I mean, but that happens to a lot of guys. I mean, it's not rare for a young guy to have shooting struggles early in his career.
Not at all. I completely agree. Look, you threw me a stat that Grizzlies coach David Fizdale absolutely loves, that Lonzo Ball has the second lowest field goal percentage in the first 11 games of his career in the shot clock era. Fizz, what do you think about that, man?
Take that for data.
I agree. I think we thieved that off Twitter from ESPN Stats and Information, but whatever. It's a fascinating stat. And yet, let me read you this stat line, Joey. First 11 games of a player's career, scoring 9.8 points per game, getting 6.5 rebounds a game, 6.5 assists per game. Overall, field goal percentage, 35%, 3-point percentage, an ugly 15.4%. Are you ready to call that stat line that I just said to you for the first 10 games of a rookie's career? Are you ready to call that a bust, Joey?
After 10 games, I'd be worried, but I wouldn't call it a bust.
Guess whose stats that was?
Who is it?
Jason Kidd. Lonzo Ball has virtually the same stats as Jason Kidd 10 games into his career. Shooting percentage, a little bit worse from twos, a little bit better from threes. But the point is not that he's going to be a Hall of Famer guaranteed, that he's going to become the next Jason Kidd. The point is, like, all right, like, we see some things right now about Lonzo Ball that we like, some things that we don't like. But are we hitting the panic button on him? I think that would be absolutely silly. I got to be honest, if we're at the end of his rookie year and we see these flashes, but we also see, you know, some red flags, I wouldn't hit the panic button then. He's 20 years old. these guys take a while to develop, especially someone like Lonzo, who frankly needs to put on some strength, frankly, who is getting every night in, night out. He is getting every team's best defender and best shot because of his loudmouth father, who we, you know, despite his foibles, we love LaVar Ball here. Wow. And part of me does wonder if there's, look, LaVar Ball's crazy. LaVar Ball's a genius. Both of those things can be true. The genius side of LaVar Ball, it makes me wonder if he's doing this on purpose, that iron sharpens iron. And he knows that if Eric Bledsoe, who was it that Lonzo, it was Patrick Beverley in the first game of his career. If Patrick Beverley says, I am going to give Lonzo, I'm going to get up in him, I'm going to show him what it's like to be in the NBA, that, you know what, it's going to suck for Lonzo's stats his first season, and it's going to make him better 3 years into his career. The fact he's not turning the ball over, has an excellent assist-to-turnover ratio, I think is a big-time positive. I think he needs to understand when to be aggressive and when to not be aggressive, and frankly, to be aggressive a little bit more. But the shot's going to fall, ugly though it is, and I still think he has superstar talent, and more than that, he's a guy that is going to make his teammates better, and that's why Lonzo Ball went number two overall. It wasn't because he shot 40% from three at UCLA.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to point out another guy. You mentioned the ugly though it is. I mean, Kevin Martin is a guy this is a guy that, you know, I think actually the first time we had Raja on the show, and I know from talking to Raja and Rip Hamilton, who both work for CBS Sports, about Lonzo, they both compared him at different points, his shot at least, to Kevin Martin and why he would be okay at the next level. And though it's a small sample size from his rookie year, he only took about three shots a game, played 10 minutes a game as a rookie. He shot 20% from three. He shot 38% from the field. This is a guy who at one point in his career averaged 25 points a game. And his shot was funky. He could only drive one way. He can only drive one way. He brought it all the way back across his body. And he averaged 2.9 points a game as a rookie. I mean, I don't think anyone was he didn't come in with the expectations of Lonzo Ball. But he couldn't shoot. He had time. He had to adjust. And he did. And it worked out for him. I think Lonzo's shooting, I mean, he's not gonna average 25 a game.
No,
but the shot will start to fall eventually. Right? No, I don't think we did, but I think the shot will eventually start to fall. I don't think the funky shot is going to be the problem. I think it's just time.
It is a funky shot. I have highlights on in the background. They're showing highlights from the Celtics game. It is a weird shot. He kind of shoots it from the opposite side of his head. I asked a bunch of NBA scouts leading into the draft, what do you think about his shooting form? Like, would you change it? And they're like, nope. Gets good rotation. It looks a little weird, but unless you have like I think one scout said is like, unless you're the Spurs and you have like the best shooting coach on earth, don't mess with it. I agree with you, Joey. I think it will come around. Lakers fans, slow your roll, chill out. You guys aren't going to make the playoffs this year anyway. You'll have LeBron and Paul George next year. Everything is going to be okay. Everything will also be okay if you go to SeatGeek, guys. I have that on my phone. I keep telling you about this awesome Arcade Fire concert a couple weekends ago. The concert that might have gotten me sick, by the way, because I was on the floor. SeatGeek helped me get to the floor. And buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better and simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. You should too. I believe, Joey, you have yours on your phone. You were talking about Jay-Z, I believe. And
on my birthday in Brooklyn.
On your birthday in Brooklyn. Thank you, SeatGeek.
Yes, sir.
By far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket. This is personally my favorite part of the app. It grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit for your budget. Best of all, our listeners, that's you, Mom. get $20 off the first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FLAGRANT. That's FLAGRANT today. Promo code FLAGRANT for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Joey, do you remember the old days? You're probably so young, you don't even remember those days. But you had to call like this shady ticket broker in whatever city you live in, and there'd be a huge markup on tickets. And it's either that or you're like, if it's a sold-out event, you're going outside the arena and dealing with even shadier people.
Or like go to like a storefront for the old guys back in the day like have to wait in line because they went. Yeah, no, that's out. Done.
This stuff feels so much more legit. For you guys who don't know this, producer Joey, before every podcast, he's an amazing researcher. I'm throwing out all these stats, pretending that I found them. I found a couple of them, but mostly it's Joey. But Joey writes little headings for each segment of this podcast, and the heading for the next segment, I think pretty much says all we need to know. What the hell is wrong with the Thunder, with the Oklahoma City Thunder, the team that has the NBA's newest big three is really, really struggling. They're sitting at – what are they sitting at right now, Joey? Four and six.
Yep.
And what's weird about this team is we expected Paul George and Melo and Russ being able to share the ball a little bit more. We expected this team to be a much better offensive team than last year, where it was just Russ and a bunch of other dudes. And they're not. They are bottom five in the league on offense. I think they're second in the league in defense, which is kind of bonkers. Like, I expected this team to be great on defense. I did not expect them to be this bad on the offensive end. This team's just kind of weird. I feel like there's a lot of my turn, your turn going on. Look, I know we got on Russ a lot last year for maybe not passing as much or kind of everything circling around him. It almost feels now that it's the opposite, that he's doing so much to assuage. I don't even know how to pronounce that word.
I think assuage. Yeah.
Assuage.
I'll go with assuage. Yeah.
He's assuaging egos. Of Paul George and of Carmelo Anthony. Russ is averaging 20.1 points per game this season. Paul George is averaging 20.1 points per game this season. Joey, I'd like you to guess, how many points per game is Carmelo Anthony averaging this season?
20.1.
Joey, you are smarter than you look, my friend. Yeah, I don't know, Joey. Like, I still... Maybe it's dumb of me. I still have faith in this lineup. I still think they are going to figure it out. They have lost some very close, very unfortunate games, whether it's Andrew Wiggins banking in a like 40-footer at the buzzer, or the next time they played Minnesota, I think it was Jamal Crawford in the corner. Close losses to good teams, losing to Boston, losing to Portland on the road, another close game. Losing, of course, to the juggernaut that is the Sacramento Kings. Okay, there goes my theory. What the hell? What are you guys doing? How can this happen? Panic in OKC, Joey, or is this just they're trying to figure things out?
I don't think they're panicking just yet.
No, are you panicking? Are you panicking?
I'm not panicking, but that's also because my expectations for this team were not as high, I think, as a lot.
My own, by the way. Like, my expectations for this team were very high.
Yeah. I thought they were going to have trouble from the beginning, like you said, figuring out how to fit these three guys who are all alphas on the same team and two guys who both have player options at the end of this year who... Yeah. Melo's is an early termination option, but two guys that likely, I mean, let's be realistic. They're trying to play friendly like they might be there next year, but these guys are gone. So these are two guys. Do you think either of these guys end up staying in Oklahoma City? I mean, they would have to win a championship, right? Or go to the finals, something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, no, you're right. I mean, that's going to be this entire season, like the background, like the drum beat in the background, or maybe it's like the baseline in the background is going to be like whether things are going bad or things are going well. It's going to be like, how does this season affect the future for Oklahoma City. Can I tell you some reasons why I am less concerned than I probably should be? One is that I'm stubborn, and going into the season, I think I said they could be either said third or second in the West, which doesn't look great right now. But also, net rating wise, they are fifth in the league. Like, you look at a 4-6 record, and you're like, how could they be fifth in the league in net rating? Well, part of it is they blew out the Bulls, but also part of it is they've been losing lots of close games, like a few shots drop for this team, and we have a completely different storyline. And I guess that's just kind of what happens when you're 10 games into a season. Another reason that I am less worried than I probably should be about Oklahoma City is they rank 22nd in three-point percentage. I don't think this is a team that by the end of the season will still rank 22nd in three-point percentage. I think the shots are going to, you know, for lack of a better phrase, the shots are going to start falling for these guys. Their defense is great. That's something that I'm not sure all of us expected going into this year, especially with Melo. I think Melo... he hasn't necessarily been the cause of it, but he hasn't been the cause of a great defense. But I don't think he's gotten in the way of it as much as we thought he might have. Joey, I'm gonna give you credit here, because even though I like to steal your stats and make them my own, you sent this to me, and I thought this was really, really interesting. The on-off splits for this big three is fascinating to me, because it's so weird to say this. This team has been better with Russell Westbrook and Paul George and Carmelo Anthony off the floor. Look, on the floor with Russell Westbrook on the floor, Oklahoma City Thunder net rating 3.3. Off the floor, a much higher net rating, 10.0. Paul George on the floor, net rating 1.8. Off the floor, when Paul George is off the floor, net rating 13.7. On the floor with Carmelo Anthony, net rating 2.1. Off the floor with Carmelo Anthony, 11.0. They're a better team with these guys off the floor. For people, Joey, I'm going to ask you, as a stat guru, explain, explain to people who don't know, and I'm guessing most people do know, explain what net rating means, and explain how you would interpret the fact that this team's, in this very small sample size, is pretty considerably better with their big three off the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's their offensive rating minus their defensive rating, and it's basically, I mean, like, to me, the big difference with all these ratings is the defensive rating, right? So this is the second best defensive team in the league, and
but with those three guys on the floor, they're somewhere around league average,
right? Well, yeah, and so I think it's more you know, it's not necessarily with all of them off or all of them on, but I think it's figuring out the mixture of who's on and who's off. So, you know, if it's Melo might be the one who's off and their defense gets better, or Paul George might be the one who's off. And I think part of it is, or Russ might be the one. And I think it's because whoever they're replacing those guys with at that moment is a better defender. Like, Russ is not a great defender. Melo's a terrible defender. Paul George is a good defender. But yep. I think when all three of them are not on the floor at the same time, it just seems like maybe they're, I don't know, are they trying harder? Are they playing? Because defense is effort, right? I mean, maybe.
Right.
I mean, because the offensive ratings, like, we didn't get dive into them much, but, you know, they don't change much. The only thing that changes when these guys are off the floor, whoever it is that's off the floor at that time, is the defensive rating gets way better. And that's how they're winning games right now. Their offense is bad. I mean, their offense is not good right now.
No. I mean, maybe bordering on awful. Yeah. Except for Andre Robertson, who, as you told me earlier, is you said he was the best offensive player in the NBA or just in the Western Conference? What was that about Andre Robertson?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out West overall. Does it go LeBron, KD, Robertson, or LeBron, Robertson, KD.
And then, of course, Lance Stevenson.
And then Lance, right. Yeah. And then, I mean, I think we mix some of those other, like, you know, Porzingis, Giannis, whoever, whatever, you know.
Sure.
The league, there's those guys that lead the league in scoring. They're good. But then there's Andre Robertson.
Give me some stats that David Fizdale is gonna love. Give me some data, bro.
His defensive rating this year is 95.5, which is incredible, right? I mean, that's better than the team. I mean, that means when he's on the floor, they are an incredible defensive team. His offensive rating is also 95.5. He has a net rating of minus 0.1. So NBA.com didn't give us like the exact, you know, to the decimal point, but basically he has a negative net rating when you go down the line. That means this guy's not just a bad offensive player, right? He is horrendous. Like, why are you still playing this guy? I get it. Your defense you need him for defense. That's great. That's fine. He is a negative for your team on the floor. And when you have another guy in Steven Adams, who's also a great defender and can at least score around the rim, but you have two guys who ruin the spacing of your offense. When you have Robertson on the floor and Robertson. You go Robertson or Robertson?
I go Robertson. Okay. I mean, I'm right.
I just don't get it. Why they insist on still playing this guy? He ruins your offense being on the floor. He hurts your team.
Joey, what did I say at the beginning of this podcast? I'm stubborn about things, right? Like, I still think Julius Okafor is going to be a really good NBA player because I liked him going into that draft. And I got to get off the Andre Robertson train because I love a dude who's going to be such a lockdown defender. And I thought he'd come around offensively to at least be competent. But man, it ain't pretty. That certainly hurts these Thunder. I'm going to continue to be stubborn about them. Like, let's come back to me like in 2018, in January. And if we're having these same conversations about the Thunder, then maybe I'll decide to change my stubborn opinion. But I have a feeling that this team is going to come around. I know you are, and you were from the beginning of the season, a lot more negative about this team, about, frankly, about the pieces around these big three, but also around this big three. You put together some comparisons for other teams with these so-called big three. And I'd love you to go into this. You pulled out some early numbers, 10 games in for the 2007-2008 Boston Celtics. That was obviously Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, the first year of LeBron in Miami, 2010-2011. And then last year's Golden State Warriors. Joey doesn't know how to count to three. I think they got four. We'll call them the big four, but that's okay. You narrowed it down to three. And I know these are silly comparisons right now, 10 games in, but I think there can be kind of telling. Like, Joey, what do you find out when you compare these Oklahoma City Thunder to these other teams with so-called big three?
I mean, I think what sort of strikes me with when I looked at the Celtics and the Heat, with the Heat, you saw Chris Bosh take a back seat, right? You saw one of those guys had to say he's going to take, he averaged 14.5 points a game, in the first 10 games with the Heat. And we
were all saying, by the way, at that point, like, what's wrong with Chris Bosh? This is a problem.
Right.
And it was, truth is, that's what they needed.
Right. They needed, I think they needed a guy. And I think, That was one thing that struck me. Also, you know, the Celtics in their first 10 games, Ray Allen averaged 20 a game. Kevin Garnett averaged 20 a game. Paul Pierce averaged 22 a game. And look, that's about what OKC is doing right now,
that's
right?
Almost exactly.
But different time, their pace was 93. Like, back then, the league was a little slower. Scoring wasn't as high. So OKC's big three are averaging around the same amount of points. And their pace is 100. Like, they would have probably led the league in pace back then. So,
and yet they rank 18th in pace now,
right.
Like,
and
a decade later.
They're playing slower.
Crazy.
In terms of where the league is at. And they're scoring less than those guys. I'm just trying to figure out. So they're spreading the ball around, but they're still not. I mean, one of these guys should be hovering around 25 points a game, right? Like, they're being maybe a little too
Russell Westbrook, right?
Right. And being a little too unselfish. I think,
isn't it weird how we can talk about Russell Westbrook being too unselfish and he's averaging 11 assists a game?
Right. Yeah, yeah, I mean, anyway, it's crazy. And then I think with, I mean, Golden State, you can't really compare them. I mean, you can't, they're big three. I looked at it from a scoring standpoint. I mean, KD averaged 27, Steph averaged 27, and Klay averaged 18 a game in those first 10 games last year. He was struggling to shoot the ball and still figuring out his way. But again, a third guy who sort of maybe took a little bit of a back seat when they brought in a bigger name. And then it all, ultimately it meshed. And then I think my biggest takeaway was the benches for these other teams. I mean, the Celtics, Rondo, Kendrick Perkins, James Posey, Tony Allen, the Heat, Haslam, Mike Miller, Mike Bibby, Mario Chalmers, who, whatever.
your theory is going down the toilet here. Obviously,
the Warriors, top role players. I mean, we don't even have to talk about them. We know. But the Thunder this year, their bench is 28th in bench. They're 28th in bench scoring right now.
Why don't you love Ray Felton, dude?
Or Alex Abreen, or the savior, Patrick Patterson, right? Remember when they signed Patrick Patterson, everyone was like, oh, that's good.
I loved that signing.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but we may have overshot it a little bit, right?
How banged up is he? Like, are we sure that he isn't, that he's just not playing at 100%, which is why he doesn't look like the guy we expected?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's also, what he averaged, like 6 points a game, something like that, 7 for his career. So, I mean, I think he is what he is. He's a good stretch four, but I think a lot of people thought, oh, he's going to come in and start and be, you know, the difference from them as a stretch four. But I think this bench is horrendous.
Is the, you know, like Billy Donovan or hate Billy Donovan, do you think there is a solution that a coach can give this team? Like, is there really, I guess what I'd say, what I'm asking is there anything that Billy Donovan can do right now?
Sure.
It's a weird roster construction, right?
It is. And I mean, if you're asking me personally what I would do, I'd probably, as much as it maybe affects your defense, you got to score to win games. Like, defense
that's
is fine.
True.
You
that's
got
not
you,
true.
You got to score.
You can have 0 points and win, Joey.
I'm going to go back to Roberson. I'd probably play him less and try to get more guys in that lineup that can shoot the ball, you know?
Hater. You're a hater, dude. Or what if it's this? Mello's shooting, what's he shooting this year? 33% from 3. What if Mello's just not that good anymore? And I'm someone who never thought Mello was all that good to begin with, but what if, and look, like, Sam Presti's got to make that trade every time, right? But what if the truth is he's just, this isn't a big three, it's a big 2.5.
That's fair. I mean, he's how old is he now? Like 30,
I mean, 34, look, maybe.
I think he's like 32, 33, something like that, whatever it is. I mean, he is, yeah, I mean, he's on the back end of his career, for sure. I mean, I think he's 33. Yeah, and you
could... I love that my 38-year-old ass with bad ankles and a bad back is calling a 33-year-old old. But
you know what? In professional athlete years, he's probably like 45, especially because there was probably some years there where he wasn't taking care of himself and still playing 80 a game, right? Like,
yep. I mean, yep, very true, man.
I mean, he's been around for a long time, and you're right. I think you're right. I mean, he's probably just not what he was, which was already a bad defender. So,
Joey, you know what I am this year that I have not been in years past? I'm a fantasy basketball player, Joey. And
that's true.
My main, see that transition?
Yes, sir.
My main advice for fantasy basketball fans here is take Andre Roberson, disregard Joey. In fact, let me trade
him to you. I wonder where he is. I wonder where he is in fantasy. His numbers might be better than, depending on the league. You never know.
Fantasy basketball fans like me, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. Simple. It's one word, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball. It's not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you can join one right now. Literally, right now, as you're listening to this podcast, you can get on Draft and join a draft. The best part, play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone, even me, who's very, very cheap. No salary caps. You play in a real live snake draft just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. And the best part about these drafts, if you had Gordon Hayward in your season-long league like I did, you won't be with this draft, you'll be fine. You can just take someone else tomorrow night. Come and join me on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes or play right from your computer on draft.com, whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But, Producer Joey, you have to use my promo code FB today. That's right. Play a real money game for free just for using my promo code FB today on your first deposit on Draft. Joey, before we wrap up, Bobby Portis, a.k.a. Mike Tyson, is back for the Chicago Bulls after an 8-game suspension for punching Nikola Mirotic. Bobby Portis looks good. It sounds like the teammates want the knockdown artist Bobby Portis on their team and not Mirotic. This is nothing in Chicago is clean these days. Nothing is easy. This team is – I feel bad for my old friend Fred Hoiberg because – this is a team that for the past couple of years thought it was still trying to make the playoffs, and this year has finally said, we need the number one pick. They have some interesting young talent. I'm curious, what do you think, Joey, is going to end up happening in this nasty, nasty situation? It sure sounds to me that Mirotic will be jettisoned and that Bobby Portis will stay a Bull. Bobby Portis with his fiery get after it nature. Bobby Portis with his, what did he score, like 13 points and 16 rebounds, 16 points and 13 rebounds, something like that last night. Bobby Portis, who, let's be honest, the deciding factor here could be that he is still on a much smaller salary than Mirotic is. Joey, reading the tea leaves, is your guess that this locker room is on Bobby Portis' side, not Mirotic's side?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details of who's with who specifically in that locker room, but from everything I'm reading, it sounds like they're on his side, which means I agree with you. I think ultimately Mirotic will be gone from that team. If it's true what sources are saying, right, within that locker room.
Joey put up the air quotes.
Yeah,
right there.
Sorry, you can't see that guy.
Sources.
Are saying within that locker room that, you know, it's Nico's problem now was one of the quotes. It looks like they have Portis's back, and I think when you're a front office that's had so many questionable decisions over the years, and just moved Jimmy Butler, and are trying to get this team together and on the same page, and trying to make it work with your head coach, the last thing I think you can do at this point is say, you know what, though? We think Mirotic is better, so we're going to keep him, and we're going to move the guy that everyone likes in Bobby Portis.
Yeah, plus, like, let's be honest. The Bulls need assets. Nico is a better asset right now if you're making a trade than Bobby Portis is, I think, which I think means he's going to be jettisoned. By the way, this is, like, my favorite part of the NBA is the soap opera side of things. It's like reports are out that Bobby Portis has both – texted and left a message for Nico, but Nico didn't call him back, and his teammates are pissed off of that. I love this. I love the LeBron passive aggressive memes. I love the sniping between old teammates. I love Jimmy Butler being so excited to play the Bulls in February. This is kind of low-key the best part of being an NBA fan. Guys, we will talk more soap opera tomorrow on Friday. We will talk rookies, and we will even talk a little bit of the rookies for next year. We will talk about college basketball season begins tomorrow, and I will tell you some names of guys that you should be paying attention to because 1 year from now, they will be in the NBA. Guys, thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining the Flagrant 2 podcast. We'll be back again tomorrow. The $1 million duck! Boom!